Hi ladies, good to be with you again. Today we are covering session 5 in CPRT, which means we are halfway there. So that is really exciting. And I know that you're starting to feel more comfortable with the skills and with teaching and with encouraging your parents to use some of these principles. So that has been very rewarding and fulfilling for me to watch you become more confident and more secure in your knowledge of this material. So as of this week, we will officially be halfway done, and that means that parents are already doing play sessions and they're starting to see the benefits of doing these sessions with their kids. So excited to be a part of this with you. So as always, I have my manual, so please feel free to follow along in yours so that you can take notes if you'd like, or just jot some things down that will be helpful when you're training your own parents. So what's interesting about this training, what I actually really appreciate, is that whenever there's a very significant skill, the week after that skill is very light. And it's almost a bit of a recap. It's a little bit of just an extension of what was already taught. And it's almost as if it gives parents a needed break from overloading their brain with something new. And so just like right after reflecting feelings, week 2 was light on skill. This is the same for week 5 because we did limit setting last week. So it's a continuation of limit setting. There's a very brief dialogue about it, but there's not a whole lot for this week. It's a lighter week, it's an easier week, and you can use that to spend more time with your parents, spend more time checking in with them about their sessions and what concerns they have and things like that. So if you'll begin with me at the top, we have one rule of thumb today. If you can't say it in 10 words or less, don't say it. And I've alluded to this before, but obviously this is the first time the skill's being presented. And I think that that is one of the most significant pieces for parents to put into this puzzle, is that we as adults overtalk and overspeak to kids. And so the principle is we want to overexplain, we want to over communicate, and then the message gets lost in those words. And so that actually piggybacks on a lot of the other skills we've been talking about, but specifically moving forward, if they can try to think of everything in terms of 10 words or less, it really does help make sure that what they're trying to communicate is effectively conveyed to their kids. And I've mentioned, I just did a parent training a few weekends back, and it was interesting to hear them use the reflecting feeling skill or the limit setting skill. And it was, "You're angry because Johnny cut in line in front of you and you thought it was unfair because you had been waiting your turn patiently and he didn't follow the rules and jumped in line." And I just heard like, oh my gosh, this is just so much. And kids just, they tune out. They don't focus and they don't care anymore. Rather than if you just said, "You're angry." That's so much more effective. And so being concise and brief is really helpful. So if you can't say it in 10 words or less, don't say it. And when you're going through examples with your parents, feel free to remind them of that. If you hear them being too wordy, if you hear them giving too much in the way of an explanation or communication for some of these skills, just say, "Hold on, let's count those words." And I literally will have parents, you know, use their fingers and go, "Oh, I'm at 13. And I say, "Okay, well, we're going to have to reduce that. Let's get it under 10. So use that with your parents to kind of coach them through the awareness of brevity. That's really important. All right, so go ahead and skip because we always will come back to homework at the end. And as you can see, we have one page. So this is a light week, and that's actually a positive for everyone, for you and for your parents. So essentially, this is limit setting 2.0, sort of, or 102 maybe. And so you gave the fundamentals last week, really set the stage, set the expectation, went through the process of ACT. They've been practicing it this week. That was part of their homework. And so this week, it's actually digging down a little bit deeper into why the limit is set neutrally. And I'm actually setting this context for you because I have felt, as much as I love this training, I have felt that this particular week was a little bit light on context, and it was a little bit light on why this is important. So I have actually embellished this section a lot with my parents because I felt that it didn't really explain why we were doing this. So I'm just telling you what I have deduced out of all of this. This is essentially because we talk a lot about when we go through ACT with our parents, you know, we talk about communicate the limit. And I stressed last week, A is not for B. And communicate the limit in a neutral, calm, factual way, just like you would say the sky is blue. But there was really no further dialogue about the significance of that other than it should be set in that way. Well, this kind of carries past what we did last week and now is saying, here are the other implications that can be communicated if you do not use those calm, neutral, factual, X is not for Y type of scenarios. So I frame it in that way first because what I found that would happen is parents would, because you have the answers filled in and they do not. So the message on all of these six bullets is blank for them. And they actually were trying to give me reasons why these were acceptable limits. That they were trying to give me the positive message, I think is what I'm trying to say. So it's probably not a good idea to paint the wall. They were trying to rationalize why that was an appropriate limit instead of having it framed in the context of these are the messages that your child can interpret if it's not said in a calm, neutral way. And so that, I think, for you all is helpful going into this so that you can set the stage there. So essentially what you're going to do with them is talk through what I just shared and then discuss the different messages that are implied in the following typical parent responses to unacceptable behavior. And that's a crucial part to spend a moment on, because these are very consistent and common responses that parents would give. And I have actually, before we've even flipped the page, while I was still on the first page, I've said, if you notice that your child was about to color on the wall at home, you know, you walk into the room and they have the marker in their hand and they are right up against the wall and they turn around and look at you right when you walk through the door, what would you say? And you will typically get most of these responses. So I've actually done that first to really make it a point to say, these are the things that we as parents say all the time. But now let's look at why that's not the most effective phrasing. And the implications that come out of those phrases are the problem. So let's look at each one of these. It's probably not a good idea to paint the wall. And what I typically do with this is I say, what word do we want to focus on in this phrase? And in this particular one, it's probably. And for each one of these, I make sure that they're aware of what the implication is for that one specific word. So probably not a good idea, meaning, well, I'm not really sure. It's probably not, but it could be. It's possibly not, but maybe. So there's too much ambiguity in the probably not. So it might be okay or it might not. And you can help them think through that. It doesn't have to be that specific phrase, but the answer that you're given is, I'm not really sure whether or not it's okay to paint the wall. It might be okay or it might not be. Okay. Next one, you can't paint the walls in here. So then I say, let's focus on a specific word. What word do you think we're going to focus on? Can't. Okay, yes. You can't paint the walls in here. Now, what I like about this exercise is our answer says you might be able to paint the walls in the other rooms. But I actually think can't is another implied message as well. Because can't makes it's very easy for the child to say, yes, I can. You can't paint the walls in here. Yes, I can. Watch me, right? So I feel like can't is actually a word that can be focused on as well. What they are actually trying to get the parent to focus on with their message, as far as Landreth and Bratton, I mean, is you might be able to paint the walls in the other room. So here is the word. You can't paint the walls in here, but you could paint the walls in the bedroom, or you could paint the walls in the kitchen. So notice how with these phrases, there's far too much nebulous expectation, and therefore, who the heck knows what the child is supposed to be doing. However, if you get to the bottom, the wall is not for painting on, parents will very clearly go, oh, okay, I get it. So as you're trickling down, remember that the last one is the accurate feeling, limit set. Okay, so then third one, I can't let you paint the wall. So, you know, have them talk through what the word of focus is there. So in that particular one, it's I can't. Because the message is what you do is my responsibility, not your responsibility. So I can't let you do that. But arguably, it's not the parent's job. So talk through that. Then maybe you could paint something else other than the wall. And it's interesting because depending on the type of parent and the parent's personality and the parent's attempt to be very kind and considerate, maybe you can paint something else other than the wall. That a lot of sweet parents, a lot of parents who try to be very kind and courteous to their kids, that would be a message that they would use. The more angry parents, the more aggressive parents, the more domineering parents, those are the ones that say, you can't paint the walls in here. So the sweet ones are usually hung up on this one because maybe you could paint something else other than the wall. I mean, that seems like such a sweet, thoughtful option. But then the kid goes, okay, and starts painting on the piano. Well, oops, that shouldn't have been the way it was, you know, set. So maybe you can paint something else other than the wall. The focus there would be other than the wall. Well, again, how do we define that? So maybe you can paint the furniture instead, could be the implication. And remember, if parents are throwing out messages, there's not specifically one that it has to be drilled down to. So maybe you can paint the furniture. You know, somebody else might say, maybe you could paint something else other than the wall, could be interpreted as, maybe you can paint yourself. Maybe you can paint on your brother. Maybe you can paint on the floor. So furniture is just an example, but you don't have to get them to specifically say exactly what these phrases are. And then the rule is you can't paint the wall. Okay, for that one, the focus is on rule. It's a rule. And that's almost like the because I said so mentality. The rule is you can't paint the wall. Well, and again, the can't word comes in because then the child says, but I can. But the rule, it's so matter of fact and it's so lacking in understanding. The message is how you feel about it doesn't matter. And when we spent a lot of time helping them understand the importance of reflecting feelings, we want the child to feel that their emotions are valid all the time. So the rule is you can't paint the wall. It's very cold and harsh. So that's the message there. But, so we have all five of these problematic interpretations and implications that come out of this. But the wall is not for painting on. The message is a very different tone, which is you're not bad for wanting to. It's just not for painting on. Now notice that that is the limit only, not the alternative. So you would then follow that up with, you can choose to paint on the paper or the coloring book. And so notice that that is solely the limit, but you would encourage the parent then to offer the alternative, because otherwise if you just say the wall's not for painting on, well then what does the child do after that? So, of course, ACT process is acknowledge the feeling, communicate the limit, and then target the alternative. So walk them through that. Let them kind of digest and process the significance of the words that are used. And, you know, it's interesting. I've had several people in my life over the course of my career that have said things to me about the importance of words and the words that you choose, and there's truth in your words, even when it may seem that it's supposed to be humorous, that, you know, what you choose to say speaks into your life. And sometimes I think we neglect the significance of the words that we say. And, you know, it just becomes rote and routine and habit, and we don't really think through what that looks like. And so I think that this really helps to put that in perspective for parents a little bit and helps them, especially with the rule of thumb, because if you couple it with our words have purpose and have significance, and there's an implication that the child receives based on the words that we choose, and then you also couple it back with, and let's not overspeak and overexplain and overcommunicate to our kids, let's be brief and concise, well then that really creates a pretty strong foundation of the significance of words for this week. So the last two pages for session five are, I'm sorry, the last three pages are the in-class play session skills checklist, which of course, as they're going through the video, that is where they can document that, yes, I was able to effectively use this skill. Then the parent play session notes are what they complete for homework. And so they will fill that out shortly after their session and or when they watch the video back. And that gives them the chance to kind of recap and process what happened in the session. And then the play session skills checklist. This is helpful when you're actually going over the video in the session, because the notes and comments section is really helpful for them to kind of jot down some information, you know, as you offer another option or as you mentioned, you know, that might have been an opportunity to do this instead. That can help them kind of, you know, document what they need to there. So the final three pages there are really for after the session. And the only thing you're covering with them this week is that why use the three-step ACT method. So as I mentioned, short and easy week. So enjoy having more time to really kind of spend time hearing about what they need and what they are struggling with and things like that. So if you'll flip back to the very front, you will see the homework assignments for this week. And number two and number three are consistent. That's what's been happening since they began their sessions, so there's nothing new there. They're going to look over their do's and don'ts, their checklist, their limit setting sheet, and then conduct their play session, use their session note sheet, their skills checklist, and the only addition is on letter C there on number three. If you needed to set a limit, describe on the checklist what happened and what you said or did. So they are at least 2 weeks into limit setting now. So should something happen in the play session where a limit is needed, then there's an opportunity for them to document that and talk with you about it. One parent will need to share their video. So make sure that you assign who will share their video the following week. So two, three, we've already gone over those before. But number one, give each of your children, now this is significant because a lot of them are working with a child of focus, meaning there are other children that are not getting the benefit of the playtime with them. So in this week, every child, not just their child of focus, gets a sandwich hug and a sandwich kiss. And that is essentially kind of the, you know, word picture of they come together and they either just sandwich them with amongst themselves. I mean, if they're a single parent or the other parent is around, obviously, you know, it's just kind of one of those smush things where you just squish up against them and give them a hug and a kiss. But it's actually more effective if another sibling or another parent is in on it and the child actually kind of gets literally sandwiched in between. And then there's that moment of closeness and connection and the physical touch and just that affectionate moment where there's just really no reason for it other than I just wanted to connect with you and share a significant, special experience. So sandwich hug and kiss this week, that's a lot of fun. It just kind of keeps the tone light and playful. And that's exactly what the underlying current of this entire thing is, creating playful moments where the relationship is encouraged and where bonds and communication are strengthened. So sandwich hug and kiss, it's a fun homework assignment. And actually what I like is hearing next week when they kind of follow up with that and you say, how did the sandwich hug and kiss assignment go? I love them sharing what happened because there's always special experiences that come out of that. So there you go, week five, short and sweet. And I'm looking forward to meeting with you all and hearing how this goes after you conduct it with your parents. So I am thinking about you all, and I know that you are getting more confident and more content with this material every week. And so I'm looking forward to hearing more about it when we meet soon. I'll see you later. Bye.